Posloucháte dopolední radiožurnál, který dnes hostí amerického architekta, kterému se také přezdívá architekt odpadu, pana Michaela Reynoldse. Hello, welcome in radiožurnál. It's very nice to have you here.
Hi, thanks to be here.
Well, you have graduated from, to get the story from the beginning, from University of Cincinnati in 1969. What was the birth of the idea of the Earthship?
Well, it was a gradual idea that just kept growing and growing. It came from the news media. It came from a news show by Walter Cronkite saying that they were clear-cutting timber in the Northwest and that we were going to, in the future, have a problem environmentally with oxygen and expensive housing. And this is, you know, this is 40 years ago. Right on his same show was this guy Charles Kuralt on the road, and he did a piece on the steel, the old steel beer and soda cans being thrown all over the streets and highways, and he predicted a garbage problem in the future. Well, both of those problems have come to pass, and I was just a young kid out of architectural school, so I was moved by both stories to the point where within the next week or so, I was trying to make a building block out of the garbage, out of the cans, so that we wouldn't have to cut trees to make housing. And people thought it was crazy. I mean, I told an older engineer my idea, and he stormed. I was in a bar and with him, and he stormed out of the bar. He said I was a disgrace to the architectural community for building, for wanting to build with garbage. Mm. So that's how it started, and it just kept growing in terms of garbage kept being a problem, and I kept using more of it. And then we added energy, and then we added water, and then sewage treatment. And a decade or so ago, I looked at what I was doing, and it was totally sustainable.
Posloucháte dopolední radiožurnál, mám teď takovou, řekněme, řečnickou otázku. Chcete mít vlastní dům, potom potřebujete zhruba 1200 PET lahví, 1300 obalů tetrapaku a desítky ojetých pneumatik. K tomu zeminu a pevnou vůli pro běh na dlouhou trať. Jeden takový muž, běžec na dlouhou trať, je také hostem dopoledního radiožurnálu. Je to americký architekt, pan Michael Reynolds. You built your first thumb house in 1972, is that correct?
Yes.
Did you move into the house when you finished it?
No, it was going to be financed by the can companies, Continental Can, and they paid me to do the drawings, and it was going to be a demonstration house to show that you could build a house out of cans. And they paid for the drawings, and then they said we're going to pay for the whole house. And so I took out a bank loan, waiting for the money to come from Chicago, from the Continental Can Company, and I started building it, and the money never came. And they flew me back to Chicago, and I sat around a table with a bunch of lawyers in the Hancock building, and they said, we can't finance your house because there are no can layers unions, and we will get sued because these are not building materials. And so they... I was a young kid. I had taken out a bank loan to build this house.
And how much was that?
It was only $11,000. That's 40 years ago. But that was a lot of money then, especially for me. And so I went to a lawyer, and I asked him, he was my friend, and I asked him, could he get the money for me? And he said, yes, I can embarrass these guys enough to get the money for you, but how much are you building it for? And I said, $11,000. And he said, well, I'll buy it. And so he financed it, and he moved into it and sold it for $65,000.
So you had actually the first experience living in that house from him.
Yes.
What was like the biggest error about the new house, in the new house?
Well, it was just the beginning of solar heating from southern faced windows. The building is still standing. It's still there today. The roof had a leak, and we didn't use good roofing materials, but that didn't have anything to do with the cans. The can structure was fine. I was young and tried out a new roofing product, so it leaked, and that was really the only mistake in it. We have evolved the whole thing a lot more now to the point where the buildings are much more substantial than that one, but that one's still standing and people are still living it.
Coming back to that can company, which stole $1,100 from you, didn't you feel that, you know, when they started to treat you like that, that this, or what you wish to do, might be a further problem whenever you move a bit more to perfection?
Well, yes, that was the beginning, my first dose of that kind of thinking, and I'm still getting it. I mean, I ended up getting my license taken away. I ended up being ridiculed. In other words, I went through the whole ugly duckling phase with garbage until they started talking about recycling 10 years ago or 15 years ago. And then as they talk more and more and more about recycling, then the ugly duckling turns into a swan. So now I'm doing the right thing. 30 years ago, I wasn't doing the right thing. Now I'm doing the right thing. So it's just when people's minds change that you are judged whether you're right or wrong.
Yeah, but being an ugly duckling, they really laugh at you. What did they say when you built the first house and when it was publicly shown?
Well, they thought it was unique. They thought it was just crazy, basically. They put it on the front page of the Denver Post in color with me there, and they put it right under Nixon getting impeached. And so it was like that kind of a thing. And they called me. I was still young, you know, and I just had been taking my architect's exam. And they called me an architect, and I wasn't really registered yet. So then the architect's board held up my license for 2 years because I allowed myself to be called an architect when I wasn't one. So I started out with ridicule, with punishment, and it never stopped until until 6 or 8 years ago.
Where does the name Earthship come from?
Well, we didn't want to, after we kept doing this and kept using more types of garbage, and we started heating and cooling them with thermodynamics and solar. We started adding power made from the sun. We started treating the sewage in the home and harvesting water. It was a totally autonomous building then that we were building, and we decided we didn't want it to be called a house because people have a preconceived idea of what a house is, and they wouldn't understand this. So we needed to name it something different because it's a machine. It's a vessel. A house is just a structure that you bring in nuclear power and you bring in water and you bring out sewage. This is a machine that encounters the natural phenomena of the planet to take care of you.
Somebody calls it Noah's Ark. Have you ever heard that
too? Well, yeah. The first book I wrote on it, I think I said something about people asking me, who is your mentor? And I said, Noah.
Let's talk about the current houses. How do they look like? Because in that document there is the Phoenix house, isn't it? So is this the last one so far? Did you move any further, like in perfection?
Yes, the Phoenix is a sort of a flamboyant example to show that that high-end people can have flat-screen TVs and high-speed internet, but they can be sustainable. I'm trying to illustrate that this is for everybody, not just wealthy people, not just the middle-income people, and not just the poor people. We're doing one of these in Midtown Manhattan for a fairly wealthy person right now. Midtown Manhattan. And then we're doing one at the same time for an orphanage school in Sierra Leone. So it's for everybody. Everybody needs shelter, water, contained sewage, and food, and heating and cooling. Everybody needs these things, so that shouldn't be limited to one financial strata.
You know, to move into a house like this, I think it really needs to change your mind. You really need to change your life. And I bet, you know, there are many houses who are ready for the people, but sometimes the people may not be ready for the house.
That's exactly right.
Do you have some experience of that kind?
Yes. The condition of the planet as it continues to get worse, like the Japan incident, after any of those kinds of incidents, people get more worried. They get scared, and they look to these kinds of things more. Then it'll fade away to the next disaster, and then they'll look at these things more. Well, it is growing, people's awareness that we are pretty much using up this planet in every way, and we have to change. And these buildings are now there. We've been doing it for 40 years. A chimpanzee could do something for 40 years and get it right. So we have finally got it right. We have a building that will take care of you. And it's priced about the same as a conventional building, but you have no utility bill whatsoever. You're secure. And so this is now a thing that has come of age.
Mm-hmm. Speaking about global warming, do you know that you're actually in the republic which has a president who says that there is nothing like that, like global warming?
Well, I've been all over the world, and this argument, I've seen people argue about this a lot. I don't care whether there's global warming or not, because I already know that people need to have lower utility bills. There's no question about that. I already know that we're running out of fossil fuels. I already know that we have too much garbage. So whether it's global warming or climate change or anything, people's lives are hard, and they're messing up the planet, and they're not as happy as they could be, and we don't have as much a future as we could have if we keep going the way we are. So you don't have to label it. But you do. There's no way anybody could not recognize that we need housing that makes its own power. Japan is showing us that, and that has its own water and contains its own sewage and heats and cools itself. The people will be much better off not having to pay for utilities.
Listening to you and knowing what you actually saying, that we already went too far with the planet. Shall I have the feeling that we are walking towards some kind of apocalypse? Or,
well, I'm saying that we have a chance to not do that. We have a chance. I mean, I'm not a scientist, so I can't say whether we've gone too far or not, except to say that we are not in a good place now. And when I walk in one of these houses in the middle of a harsh winter, and it's warm, that is a better place, and it's not taking any fuel to do that. We're applying biology and physics to give people sustenance, and we're not making a nuclear power plant and having to move it through wires. The whole idea of centralized utilities is pretty archaic when you look at what it does to the planet, and the fact that you make a nuclear power plant and it has to serve you for 50 years, so therefore you can't evolve for 50 years. But every house, there's a house built on this planet every minute, and so you can evolve every minute or you can evolve every 50 years. Well, in this world, we need to evolve every minute, if not quicker.
Dopolední radiožurnál je s vámi. Bavíme se dnes o bydlení, které by se mohlo stát bydlením budoucnosti, pakliže jsme ochotni překročit nějaké vlastní hranice. Americký architekt Michael Reynolds je naším hostem. We were talking about Earthship, so give us some idea, or could you take us inside and to tell us how the Earthship really works?
Well, I come in at 11:30 at night in the middle of a hard winter, and it's frigid cold and blowing wind outside, and I walk into my house, and still after 40 years of doing this, I walk in and I'm impressed. I'm like, this is warm, and there is no heater on, and there is no bill, there's no utility bill, there's no nuclear power plant. I am using physics to take care of me and doing it with garbage. And these are things people throw away. And I'm like saying, I want to tell people about this. I can't really, it's not like a product that I can sell. And it's not an idea I'm trying to convince people of. It's that this is really a good life. Why shouldn't I tell people about it?
Tell me about the heating. How does it work?
Well, it's It's physics, and thermal mass, your body is made of 86% water. And so your body, water is very dense matter, and so it holds temperature. The molecules are really close together and dense, and the temperature just stays there. It's a known fact of physics that temperature moves to the cooler place. So if the building is oriented toward the sun and it's made of mass, the sun comes in and heats up the mass, and it stores it. And then when the sun goes down and the air in the rooms gets cool from no sun, the temperature in the mass leaks out into the room, almost like turning on a furnace. So that's how it works. And the more mass you have, the more temperature you store. And these buildings stay within a few degrees winter and summer without any fuel whatsoever, and it's totally in the comfort zone. And we have severe winters, and we have very hot summers, and we sit there with no utility bill.
I presume electricity comes from the solar panels?
The electricity comes from solar panels and wind. And another thing, and I think you mentioned something to this effect, is that the amount of electricity it would take to power a conventional home is expensive, and it's a huge amount. These homes are designed to design down the electrical needs. So there's no electricity need for heating and cooling. There's no electricity needed to pump water. There's no electricity needed for fans for ventilation. There's only electricity needed for making a light, watching a TV. So it's a minimal amount of electricity, and so we then can make that electricity easily with sun and wind. And so it just makes it so you don't have any electric bill, and you're secure. You don't have to worry about blackouts, and you aren't participating in the need for a nuclear power plant, and your life is better when you aren't a victim of the economy of utilities.
How about the water? Maybe somebody is used to come to the house and just jump into the tube, which is full of water. How does it work in your house?
The same way. You can have, in this climate, we have developed this in our climate in New Mexico, which is dry, and it only gets like 7 or 8 inches of rainfall a year. And that's like less than a third of a meter, it's like 25 centimeters of rainfall and snow melt. And it works for us. Here you probably get like a meter of rainfall a year. And so water would be no problem. And so then you say, well, why conserve water? The reason we conserve water, even in a wet climate like this, is because if you use less water, you're producing less sewage. And then that makes your sewage treatment easier. So it's always use less. Don't do without. Have a flat screen TV, have high speed internet, have a hot shower, hot tub, whatever. It's just use it wisely. We don't use anything wisely. We don't use anything conservatively. If you use it wisely, it makes it so you can provide all of your utilities through encounter with the phenomena of the planet.
What I do like is the idea that, you know, you can live in the house without going shopping, let's say, for a week or maybe longer. Where this idea arrived to you?
Well, see, the ideas just kept coming from the media, we got into food recently, because food is bananas that come to New Mexico come from Ecuador. The carbon footprint of that banana is huge. I'm growing bananas in my living room in New Mexico, where it has a severe winter at 7,000 feet. That's 2,500 meters. I'm eating bananas when there's 2 feet of snow on the ground outside that grew in my living room. There's no carbon footprint on that banana. And so we're making the buildings now produce as much food as possible. The idea with the Phoenix building is that a family of four could live there and never have to go to the store, never have to buy electricity and have public sewage, municipal water, or heating and cooling. They can survive no matter what happens unless they drop a nuclear bomb right on the house. They have everything. They can survive. And it's good for them, but it's also good for the planet.
Posloucháte dopolední radiožurnál. Téměř ani nedýchám, když poslouchám dnešního hosta, pana Michaela Reynoldse.
Next year, I think, if I'm right, it's going to be 40 years since you've started building of Earthship. What was the worst moment of your career, when the authorities closed the community in Taos, or when they took the license away from you?
Well, there have been a lot of bad moments. I was wondering if I was wrong, because so many people said I was wrong. But I just intuitively kept going. So there was a period of 3 or 4 years where it really got bad. But the things that it's ironical what would go on. Like the day that I drove home from the Capitol after they took my license, I arrived home and my alma mater, where I graduated from, had given me Alumni of the Year. And when the National Board notified me that they were going to take my license also, I got home in a few days later, and there was a book out of the 100 best houses in the world, and one of my houses was in there. So I'm like deciding, am I wrong? Am I incompetent? Or am I doing the right thing? In other words, there was always enough positive with the negative that I could never go for the negative. So, and it's still the way it is.
So you have never thought of like having a life like your university mates, building big, tall houses in the cities and the things like that?
No, I mean, I'm getting into cities now. We do have a project in Midtown Manhattan, and that is going to be very interesting. It's a residence. But the thinking that has interested me is people. Like, making it so people can have the sustenance that they need without being subject to economy, politics, corporations. It's giving people sort of a roadmap to a real freedom. And governments and can have more time and money for hospitals and schools and things like that. But this gives people their life in their own hands, and all they have to do is relate to the phenomena of the planet.
Are you absolutely sure that, let's say, builders' lobby and energetical lobbies are in favor of, you know, this kind of thinking?
No, they're not. But I don't care. You know, they're going. I have been through the state legislature for 4 years.
And was it that this kind of lobby,
oh,
which
yeah,
was
they
like
would,
against you?
Yeah, they were so everything was against me, but. What an interesting thing was, when I first started, I was talking in the legislature. When I first started, I was talking about global warming, and this is one of the reasons. And the older legislators called me aside and said, don't even mention global warming, because you'll be called a fool. You'll be laughed out of here. If you want to get your law passed, don't say it's because of global warming. So they said, no, don't even talk about it in the first year. The fourth year, when the law got passed, and the governor is making his speech, I looked over somebody's shoulder, and they were reading a paper, and they had the headlines, Global Warming is Real. So it's like things keep changing. People keep getting more and more worried, and that's what causes this to be more and more accepted. And all I have to do is, if I believe it's scientifically correct to be doing this, then I just do it.
In 2004, you left the United States. You went to Asia?
Yeah.
To some island. Why was it? Why after tsunami? Was it that you wanted to help people, or you wanted to prove your houses?
Both. They asked us to go. Some people there, an architect and a group of people, asked us to go because they had seen on the internet that we did know how to do shelter from garbage, and we knew how to harvest water, and we knew how to make sanitation sewage systems. And so those are the three problems that they always have after every disaster: water, shelter, and sanitation. Well, I observed then, after doing that quite a few times, that those are the problems that we have everywhere. water, sewage, and housing and shelter, and add energy to that. So the problems that people have after a disaster are just accentuated problems that we have anyway. And the reason we go to a disaster is because a disaster is really a hole in dogma. Because they're so desperate, they'll let you do anything.
Coming back from Asia to United States, what gave you your license back? What was it?
Well, I think the work, like in Asia after the tsunami, and we're doing work in Haiti now, that kind of work illustrated to them that this was something that could have a positive effect, and that I was willing to take some risks for it, and they let me have my license back.
Posloucháte dopolední radiožurnál, který hostí amerického architekta, kterému se také přezdívá architekt odpadu, pana Michaela Reynoldse.
I was quite curious actually about building an earthship in Czech Republic, about just the possibility. So I called the authorities and I mentioned that kind of structure, and you know what I've been told? That the things I want to build my house from should be certificated, and the tires and the plastic bottles are not. Is that a surprise to you?
No, not at all. That's the nature. We have all the new products that are being manufactured are certified, and you could go through the process of having them certified, and we may end up doing that in some circumstances. But the thing is, I think the time factor that the authorities are seeing now is starting to, we're starting to need to do something quick about garbage, about pollution, about energy. And what I have come up with is really this testing site idea, where, okay, we'll get these things certified somewhere in the next 10 years, but let's test them now. Let's make sites to test them. Because in New Mexico, when we got when they bombed Pearl Harbor, they tested an atomic bomb, and there was a lot of health hazards there and a lot of danger there. But they tested it because of national security, in the interest of national security. Well, what I'm saying is every country, it's in the best interest of national security of every country now to test new methods of living so that we don't destroy what we have left of this earth.
So you've already talked to the Czech people and to some people living here. Do you have any idea when we are going to have our first earthships?
Well, I was surprised today at the press conference to hear that they invited me to build a demonstration earthship, I think, at the Botanical Biological Gardens.
Yeah.
And it will be probably labeled a demonstration, an education, a tourist attraction. So it will be the step. And then when people walk in it in the winter and it's warm and they see bananas growing and see it functioning, that will open the doors to certification or whatever. In other words, certification is either a piece of paper or it's everybody sees that this is right. And the demonstration is better than any amount of talking and slideshows and lectures and so on.
Czech Republic is not New Mexico, of course. Will the house be any different from those you have?
The houses in every climate evolve a little. The example I make is like, it's like an automobile engine. There's a concept for an automobile engine. If you're going to drive up the mountains with a heavy load, it's going to be in a Toyota pickup truck. If you're going to drive 130 miles an hour down a highway, it's going to be a BMW, but it's still an engine with pistons that run on fuel. So these concepts of thermal mass and solar gain and water collection and biologically treating sewage, they're adapted and twisted just like the car engine is geared differently and set up on a different chassis. So it's the same concepts tuned to the various climates.
You know what I do like the most about your house? That it brings the community of the people together. Well, that's what I've seen in the document. To me, this is fascinating, and it looks very, let's say, idealistic in the document. Was it so with the people's relationships and their chances with the house?
Well, people are still people, but when they are together trying something, it does bond them together. It does give a sense of community. And as opposed to just closing their doors to each other and buying utilities from a nuclear power plant. So the fact that they're all out there on this voyage together does bring them together in a more solid way than the way we're living now.
Can I build a house like that on my own?
Lots of people have, just like you. None of the methods are really rocket science, and we're putting out books and videos and movies and everything showing people how to do it, and that's why I'm going around the world. I've been to Haiti. In the last 3 months, I've been to Haiti, Australia, China, Sierra Leone, all over the place, and we're planting these seeds. We're planting this kind of like it's a virus, and planting the virus so that it'll grow. And it's really in the minds and the hearts of people, and it empowers people. I get mail all the time, email that says, this is just giving me hope. If people get hope and they have a little bit of science behind it, they can do wonders.
Did you have the hope during those 40 years, or have you ever lose it?
I'm stubborn. So I had more than hope. I couldn't stop because I believe it. I believe I've seen it work. When you have seen, so to speak, when you have seen the promised land, nobody can ever convince you that it's not there.
Well, you have already planted one little seed in our family. There is the question on behalf of my almost eight-year-old daughter. How many cans and bottles do we need for the house?
Probably cans and bottles, you could use 5,000 of each. A home takes about 1,000 or 800 tires, depending on the size of the home. And we use everything. Once you start using these products that we throw away, in Port-au-Prince in Haiti, we paid the kids to go out with little rice bags and gather up the styrofoam and cardboard and the plastic bottles that were basically paving the streets. And gathered them up, tore them up, and made insulation. So we were paying children to clean the streets and manufacture insulation. Three things all in one move.
My last question is, do you have any guilty green secret?
Guilty green secrets?
Yes, tell me something. Well, because everything sounds so perfect.
No, I eat bacon. I love bacon. I love beer. You know, it's like I am not perfect. I have failed more than I have succeeded. For every success I have, there's been 9 failures. And so it's just stumbling along, learning from mistakes. And that's what I think is one of the problems with the world today, is that we're not allowed to make mistakes, so we really can't learn. And I make mistakes one right after the other, so I'm learning.
Michael Reynolds, thank you very much for the interview.
Thank you.
And my compliments to you and all the work you've done
thank
so
you.
Far. Thank you very much.
Okay.